An Osho Talk. From Unconsciousness to Consciousness, Number 8.
Why are you against the politicians?
I'm not against anybody. I have no grudge, no competition, no jealousy. Why should I be against the politicians? I'm not a politician. But my statements can be misunderstood. I am against the disease called will to power. This is the greatest disease as far as man's consciousness and its growth is concerned. It is just like the cancer. It is the cancer of the soul. Will to power can express itself in many ways. The most easier is politics, because it needs not much intelligence. All that it needs is the capacity to create false hopes in the masses, which have never been fulfilled, which were never meant to be fulfilled. Their purpose was something else. And the masses are in suffering. They are poor. They are ignorant. They also need all the comforts of life. They also want to live like human beings with dignity. The politician gives them the hope and exploits the hope for his own purpose. Because once he gets the power once he becomes somebody, a prime minister, a president, then something in him feels at ease. It was his psychological need. These people are basically deep down important. Hence the urge to power. They feel their weakness and powerlessness. They know they are nobodies. But if they can convince the mediocre mob that they will be fulfilling their needs, then it is a mutual understanding, a bargain. Then the masses give them power. Once they have got the power, they forget all their promises. In fact, they never meant them. And once they have the power, then you see their real face. Lord Acton was absolutely right when he said, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But he was not aware why power corrupts. How power can corrupt? The man must be carrying the seeds of corruption already. But he was incapable to do anything. He needed power. Once he has the power, then slowly his mask starts falling away. And you will see within him the egoist in its utter nudity. The politician is nothing but an egoist. Inside he feels empty and afraid of that emptiness. He wants to be somebody so that he can forget his own emptiness. Power gives him the chance. He can see that millions of people are under his thumb. He can convince himself that he is not nobody. He is somebody special. And he starts behaving that way. He starts misusing the power. Once he is in power, then he never wants to be out of it. Then he always wants to remain in power. Because now he knows perfectly well, out of power, he will be more aware than ever of his emptiness and his impotence. What I am against is the game of the ego. Who plays it? In what subtle ways one plays it is a totally different matter. Politician is the most apparent player of the game. The religious messiah, avatara, tirthankara, pagambara, Jesus, Muhammad, Krishna, Buddha, they are in the same trip, the same number, but it will need tremendous intelligence to see their power gain. The politician is nothing compared to them. The politician is playing a very trivial game. But when Jesus says, I am the Son of God, the only begotten Son, what it is, if not a power trip? When he says, I am the awaited Messiah of the Jews, and I have come to redeem the whole humanity from suffering, misery, and those who follow me will enter into the kingdom of God, and those who do not follow me will fall into hell's darkness for eternity. The same will to power, but in a religious garb, it is difficult to detect it. It is more subtle, more refined, more polished. When Krishna says to Arjuna, leave everything aside and come to my feet, I am your deliverance. What he is saying, what he is asking, the same need when Muhammad says, I am the messenger of God. And I am the last messenger. After me, there will be coming no messenger again. I have brought you the ultimate word. Yes, before me there have been few messengers. But because humanity was not prepared, their messages were incomplete. I bring you the complete message, the absolute message. All that you have to do is to believe in me. One God, one messenger of God, that is Muhammad, and one book of God, that is Muhammad's written book, Quran. These are the three fundamentals of a Mohammedan. One God, one messenger, one book. Nothing has to be added. These power-hungry people have always been afraid that somebody later on may prove better. Mahavira says, I am the last Tirthankara of the Jainas. Now, the message is delivered in its total completeness, and there will be no more any Tirthankara. What he is telling, 2500 years before, he closed the door. Darwin has not happened yet. Freud has not happened yet. Marx has not happened yet. Einstein has not happened yet. And he closed the doors. The message is complete. In fact, the whole science has happened within 300 years. And the last religion is Sikhism, which is 500 years old. After Sikhism, there has not been any great religion. And in these 300 years, everything has gone upside down. Before 300 years, Aristotle was the father of logic. And the last word in logic. He is no more. His logic has not proved true to the latest discoveries of science. It was such a great problem for the scientists when they discovered phenomenon which went against Aristotle's logic. They had never thought that anything can happen against Aristotle's logic. But Aristotle cannot dictate to existence. These people tried in every way somehow to fit things into Aristotelian system, but it was impossible to fit. And then finally they had to accept non-Aristotelian Aristotelian logic. They had to accept a simple fact that nature, existence has to be listened. What we impose upon it may be true for the time being. Tomorrow we may discover more. It may be proved wrong. Before 300 years, Euclid's geometry was the only geometry. And a complete science. Now it is no more. Non-Euclidean geometry has taken place. Because of the latest discoveries in science, it became absolutely necessary that we have to think against Euclid, against Aristotle. Mahavira, Krishna, Buddha, Jesus, Moses, Muhammad, they all happened before science has even started scratching the very beginning of things. But they all thought that with them stops the evolution. With them stops time. No. Time does not stop with anybody. Evolution does not stop with anybody. These are all egoistic claims. The ego would like that everything stops with me, that I am the ultimate happening. Nothing more, nothing better, nothing higher is going to happen. Even Gautam Buddha forgets completely. He declares, I am the highest awakened person, the supreme most awakened person. Nobody has been so awakened before and nobody will be so awakened again. Nobody is higher than me. And nobody will ever be higher than me. And these people, on the other hand, go on teaching, be humble, drop the ego. It seems to be a beautiful arrangement. To the people, say, be humble. And you be the only begotten Son of God. To the people say, be egoless. And you declare yourself the supreme most awakened person. Not only that you are the highest up to now, you are even closing it for the future. Nobody can transcend you. In India, there is a religion, Radha Swami. They have a list. They think there are 15 stages of the evolution of soul. So, Muhammad is on the third stage. I'm just telling you as an example. Jesus is on the fourth stage, one stage higher. Krishna is on the fifth, one stage higher. Buddha on the tenth. They have put all the names in categories. Their guru, who is not known outside India, not known outside the city of Agra, a very small sect, he has reached to the 15th. The last. There is no other stage above it. I was visiting their temple. They are making a temple just according the same power trip. Agra has Taj Mahal, one of the most beautiful creation of man. They are making a better temple. Just to defeat Taj Mahal, they have been working almost for 60 years on it. Only one floor, ground floor, is ready. It will take at least 200 years more. But the way they are doing it, even the incomplete structure, you can see if they succeed, which seems to be difficult, if they succeed to make it, they will defeat Taj Mahal. You can see just whatsoever they have done is superb. That was their guru's wish, that his samadhi, his memorial should be better than Taj Mahal. Otherwise, don't make it. If you make it, then it has to be better than Taj Mahal. If you cannot manage, it is difficult. Taj Mahal was made by a great emperor, Shah Jahan, who ruled over India perhaps the time Shah Jahan ruled India was four times bigger than it is today. Because his empire is spread beyond, far beyond the boundaries of India. Afghanistan was part in it. Burma was part in it. Ceylon was part in it. what is today India, Shahjahan's empire was certainly four times or more bigger. And he was making this memorial for his wife. That too again, the same game. You will be surprised. It was not out of love. He had many wives. Mumtaz Mahal was just one of them. Perhaps he used to meet him once in a year. Because if you have 400-500 wives, and I don't think he would have recognized her if he had suddenly met her in the marketplace. He may not have seen her more than half a dozen times in her whole life. But she died. She was the first one in the whole army of his wives. He decided to make a memorial which will be the best in the world. He forgot at that time that what about his memorial? ₹20,000 people continued to work for 20 years to make Taj Mahal. All the best artists who could work on marble from all over the known world were brought to Agra. And when Taj Mahal was complete, Taj Mahal is named because the wife's name was Mumtaz. Hence Taj Mahal, the palace of Taj. Taj, he used to call her lovingly. Then he started making his own before he dies, because he was absolutely certain that his son will not be able to put so much energy and so much money. And now it was a great problem before him. He recognized it only when Taj Mahal was complete, that my memorial has to be better than Taj Mahal. Of course, a husband's memorial has to be better than the wife. The male chauvinist is everywhere. But it is the same power trip. So on one side of the river Yamuna is Taj Mahal. It is made of white marble. He started to make another memorial on the other side of the river with black marble. And it was going to be better than the Taj Mahal. It is only half complete. But you can see it would have been better if Shahjahan has lived to complete it. He died. He was old. And his son simply dropped the whole project. It was too costly. So there lies an incomplete memorial which was going to be bigger than Taj Mahal. And then these Radha Swamis, there is again another, which is certainly, if it succeeds, which is almost impossible, because it is such a small sect, very rich, very creative, but to compete with Shah Jahan is not possible. And do you know what Shah Jahan's son Jahangir did? Not only he discontinued the project, he cut the hands of the best artists. So that nobody can make anything comparable to the complete Taj Mahal or the incomplete memorial of his father. That was the reward given to those people who had worked almost three generations ego trips. So this temple, I was invited. They showed me that our master has taught to us that there are 15 stages. And this is the way he has described who is where, who is who, and who is where. What do you think? They asked me. I said, your master is right. Because from the 16th, I can see him trying to reach to the 16th, but he goes on slipping. It is very slippery. This is the last. The poor fellow goes on falling. I know him. These stupid people. But in the name of religion, the same will to power, you will find it very refined in the poets, in the painters, in other artists, singers, dancers. But it is the same, so I am not against the politicians. I am against the will to power. Because the will to power is nothing but ego projection. And that is the greatest barrier between you and existence. The bigger you have, the farther away you are from existence. If it is not there, the meeting, the merger, but I will not tell you drop the ego. I am fully aware how cunning is the ego. It can even play the game of dropping it. And you can say, look, I am the humblest person in the world. The most egoless. It has come from the back door again. Now you are the humblest, the most egoless. But you have to be somebody special and extraordinary. I only say to you, if you try to drop it, it will come from the back door. Just try to understand its games. That's enough. Just to try how many games it can play, in how many ways it can deceive you. Just be alert. And if you are aware of all the possible ways of the ego, it disappears. Just like darkness disappears when you bring a lighted candle in and you start looking with the candle for darkness where it is. And you go on looking and wherever you go it is not, wherever you go it is not. When the light is there, the darkness disappears. It is not that darkness escapes out. Darkness does not exist at all. It is only an absence of light. Ego is just like darkness. It has no existence of its own. It is only the absence of awareness. So I don't say drop the ego. I say watch it. Be watchful. Observe it. And you will find it in so many layers. You will be surprised. The politician is a grass egoist. The saint may be a very subtle egoist. He is in more danger than the politician, because the grass can be caught very easily. I know the grassist politician and I know the subtlest saint, and I know all the categories in between. I have met all these people. My whole life's work is to find out the basic problem of humanity. And once we know the basic problem of humanity, it is not difficult at all to dissolve it. In fact, in its very finding, it dissolves. Because your awareness becomes a light unto itself. I cannot say I am a messiah. I cannot say I am an avatara. Because I know those are subtle ego games. All that I can say, I am just as ordinary as anybody. Are as extraordinary as everybody. In existence, the smallest blade of grass has the same significance and the same beauty as the greatest star. There is no hierarchy. There is nobody higher, nobody lower. I am not against anybody. But my basic work is to expose before you all the diseases, the bondages, so that you are not caught in them. So you can remain free. So you can have a merger with existence without any barriers. And ego is the only barrier. It can come in so many ways that unless you are really alert, it will deceive you. It can become so subtle, almost like a shadow. That it will follow you. And you will not be aware of it. I would like to tell you a small story. Two monks, Buddhist monks. Are returning to their monastery. They come to a ford. The current is very powerful. It is a hilly place. A young, beautiful girl is waiting there. Waiting for somebody to help him to cross. She is afraid to enter alone. One monk, who is the older one, of course, because he is older, he walks ahead. All games of the ego. Even older, you have to walk ahead. Younger monks have to walk a little back. They cannot walk parallel to the older monk. Of course, they cannot walk ahead. And these are the people who are talking continuously of dropping the ego. Even the physical age is used to fulfill certain ego. The older monk comes first. The young girl asks him, Bhante. Bhante is the Buddhist equivalent for reverend. Bhante, would you help me just to hold my hand? I'm afraid. The current is so strong and perhaps it may be deep. The old man closes his eyes. That's what Buddha had said to the monks. That if you see a woman particularly if she is beautiful, close your eyes. But I am surprised. You have seen her, then you close your eyes. Otherwise, how you determine she is a woman and beautiful? You are already affected. And now you close your eyes and remember with closed eyes, the beautiful woman will become even more beautiful. She will become a dream girl. And Buddha had said, don't talk. Don't touch a woman. Because just talking, you may get caught. Touching, you may forget that you are a monk. So he closes his eyes and enters into the forge without answering the woman. You see the ugliness of it. And these people are saying, help, serve. And that poor girl was simply asking, hold my hand just for a few seconds so I can pass the fold. And the man closed his eyes. Then the second younger monk comes. The girl was afraid, but there was nothing to fall upon. The sun was setting, soon there will be night. She cannot go back. The town is far away. She had to go ahead. Then only she can reach her home before it becomes too dark. But how to pass this ford? So under compulsion, she asked the young monk, Bhante, will you please hold my hand? The ford seems to be deep and a strong current, and I am afraid. The monk said, it is deep, I know, because we pass through it every day. On the other side is our monastery. So to beg food, we have to come to this side, to the village. It is deep, and it is good that you have not entered alone. Otherwise, you would have gone with it. And just holding hands won't do. You just sit on my shoulder, and I will carry you to the other side. The young girl jumps on his shoulder. He carries her to the other side. When they are just in the middle of the ford, the old monk remembers that a younger fellow is coming behind, and he is too young and too new. He may get caught into the devil's net. The woman is the devil's net. Perhaps it is devil himself standing in the form of a young, beautiful girl. He opens his eyes, and what he says, he cannot believe. He is carrying the beautiful girl on his shoulder. Now he is tremendously angry, shaking with anger. The young monk leaves the girl on the other shore and follows the older monk towards the monastery. When they reach the monastery door, it must have been 2-3 miles from the ford. On the steps, the older monk stands and says to the young one that, "You fellow, you have committed a sin, and I am going to report to the Buddha that not only you touched a woman, not only you talked with her, you carried her on your shoulder. You should be expelled from the community. You are not worthy to be a monk." The young man simply laughs and says, "Bante, it seems although I have dropped that girl 3 miles back, you are still carrying her on your shoulder. 3 miles have passed, and you are still bothered by it. This is what happens if you start fighting with anything. It may be sex, it may be ego, it may be greed, it may be fear, it may be anger, whatsoever. If you start fighting with it, and how you will drop it? Other than fight, how you are going to drop it? You will push hard. But where you will push it? Anything pushed goes deep down into your own unconscious. And anything in the unconscious is far more powerful than in the conscious. Because conscious is only one power. The unconscious is 9 times bigger than that. And in the conscious mind, at least you are aware what is there. In the unconscious mind is so dark, you don't know what is there. And it is 9 times bigger, powerful. It can take over your conscious effort any moment. Now, what is happening to this old monk? Many things at the same time. The girl was beautiful. He has missed a chance. He is angry. He is jealous. He is full of sexuality. He is, what he is saying to the younger one, is really in a mess. The younger one is completely clean. He took over the girl and left on the other shore. And that's that. The thing is finished. But the younger monk must have been of tremendous awareness. That awareness is my teaching. Never fight with greed, ego, anger, jealousy, hatred, all those enemies that the religions have been telling you, fight with them. crush them, kill them. You cannot kill them, you cannot crush them, you cannot fight with them. All that you can do is just to be aware of them. And the moment you are aware, they are gone. In the light, the darkness simply disappears.
Are you in favor of communism?
Yes and no. First, let us discuss the no. I am against the communism that exists in Soviet Union, in China, and in other communist countries. I am against the communism that Karl Marx, Engels, Lenin, Stalin, Mao, these people have given birth. Because what they have given birth is not communism. That's why I am against it. What they have given birth is a dictatorial, inhuman, slave society. Undemocratic, with no respect for the individual, no recognition even for the individual. He is only a number, just as in the army numbers exist. One man dies on the army board, number 8 is killed, or number 8 is lost, not found. But do you see the psychological difference? Number 8 has no wife, no children, no mother, no old father, no old grandmother. Number 8 is just number 8. Arithmetic. It has nothing to do with humanity. But if you replace it by his real name, then you feel differently. You start thinking, what will happen to his wife? He was a friend to someone. What will happen to his mother, to his old father, who were looking and depending on him? What will happen to his children? Hence, in the army, they don't use the names. They will create psychological disturbance in other people. Only numbers. And numbers are replaceable. Number 8 has fallen. Let him go. Somebody else becomes number 8. He will not become the husband of number 8's wife, and he will not become the son of number 8's father. The army is not concerned about that. Numbers are replaceable. Human beings are not. The communism that has arisen out of Karl Marx is inhuman. Because it does not take in account of your individuality at all. Marx says you are nothing but matter. And if you are nothing but matter, then what does it matter whether you live or die? So it was very easy for Stalin to kill millions of people in Russia. It would not have been so easy if Marx has not said that it is only matter. There is no problem. Stalin feels no prick in his conscience, destroying millions of people. They are not people. They don't have any souls. They are only mechanisms. I am not going to be a supporter of this idiotic ideology which takes humanity from man. His humanity has to be enriched. His individuality has to be sharpened. They destroy everything that is individual. They want you just to be a part of the collective whole. Just a part. A cog in the wheel, which is always replaceable. And I know that no human being is replaceable. Because every human being is so unique, so utterly unique, that there is no way to replace him. In Marxian communism, there is no respect for the individual. What they are closing, do you know? They are closing the door to your own being. And if that door is closed to your own being, you are separated from existence totally. Then there is no question of seeking and searching the truth. There is no question of knowing thyself, of being thyself. In fact, it is dangerous of being thyself, knowing thyself. It is better to be just a cog in the wheel, with no self. Marx's idea is not based on any inner search. I pity the man. He was intelligent. But he remained only intellectual. Bookish. A bookworm. In the British Museum library, he entered every day, the first man, and he had to be forced out every day because the museum was going to be closed, and sometimes he had to be taken on a stretcher because reading the whole day and smoking cigarettes, that was all that he was doing. He will become unconscious. For 40 years continuously, British Museum had to deal this man. But they became aware that we have to accept him. He is the first man before the door opens, he is standing there. And he is the last man. If you find him conscious, you can take him out. If you find him unconscious, you carry him on the stretcher to the hospital. This man never, even for a single moment, meditated. He knew nothing of the inner. He was just concerned with the books. What he has written in Das Kapital, no communist reads it. I have met hundreds of communists. No communist reads. Every communist keeps it in his house, just as a Christian keeps the Bible. It is the Bible of communism. And exactly they have created the Trinity, Mars, Angels, Lenin. And the Bible is the Das Kapital. But nobody reads it. I have gone through it from the first page to the last. It is all words. No experience. Quotations from other books, but no authentic experience, not a single experience of his own. What kind of a man Karl Marx is? Jews give a strange type of people to the world. First they gave this Moses. Who for 40 years drove the whole Jewish community. 75% of his people died in 40 years searching for the Israel. And what a coincidence that he passed over all those places which are now the richest. The Middle East, all the oil sources, he passed all those. And he is God's chosen prophet. And he knows nothing about the oil. And he stopped at Israel, where is nothing, just a desert. If he had stopped somewhere before, Jews would have been immensely happy. They could have created a paradise. Then comes Jesus, another Jew. And because of Jesus, Jews gave birth to Christianity. They are responsible. If they had not crucified Jesus, there would have been no Christianity. And what Christianity has done to humanity, do you know? In the past 20 centuries, how many million people Christians have killed, burned alive in the name of God and the Holy Ghost and the Son? They could burn people alive because they were absolutely certain that what they are doing is right. Jesus has given them the right to bring everybody to the fold. So there were crusades going on continuously against the pagans. And you will be surprised, the pagans are far closer to existence than anybody else. The pagans are the people who worship nature, trees, mountains, oceans, rivers, stars. The pagans are those who accept this whole that surrounds you as divine. They are far more closer to me than these so-called religious people. They were killing pagans because they did not believe in a creator God. And the pagans were being killed by everybody. Jews were killing because they were not believing in Jewish God. Christians were killing them because they were not believing in the Christian God. Mohammedans were killing them because they were not believing in Mohammedan God. And there are so many gods. It is good that Hindus never started killing, because Hindus have 33 million gods. If they had started killing, then there would have been no humanity at all. Gods. The idea is so old that at that time there was not 33 million people even on the whole earth. What to say about Hindus? The whole earth had not 33 million people, but Hindus have 33 million gods. Why 33 million gods these Hindus had? Because Jainas have 24 Tirthankaras. Buddhists, just not to be left behind, that ego goes on. Invented. They have only one Gautam Buddha, but they invented. It is a fiction. But they had to compete with the Jainas. They were their competitors, contemporaries. Jainas authentically had 24 Tirthankaras. Buddha was alone. First he tried that he is the 24th Tirthankara. When he was not accepted by the Jainas and Mahavira succeeded to be accepted, he created the fiction that there have been 24 Buddhas, 23 before him. In fact, those 23 were his lives. He has been 23 times before as a Buddha in the world, and this is his 24th life. Now, this is pure fiction. Just to compete with the Jainas, they have to be 24. But Hindus just, first they tried. At that time, they had only the idea of 10 avatars. Seeing that Jainas and Buddhas have 24, they immediately change their number. So any scripture that is written after Gautam Buddha and Mahavir says we also have 24 avatars. But then to defeat this competition forever, they managed this idea of 33 million gods. Marx is another gift of the Jews to the world. And, but really a Jew. And the reason that he is the founder of communism is not any compassion for the poor. No, not at all. It is jealousy for the rich. This you have to understand clearly, because that will change the whole attitude. His father was poor. His father's father was poor. He was poor. He remained dependent on the support of a friend, Frederick Engels, who was a rich man, who went on giving him money. Frederick Engels is not a great intellectual or anything. But because he was supporting financially, Marx went on putting his name with his name on every book he wrote. Nothing is written by Frederick Engels. It is just Marx showing his respect. In fact, it is in a way right, because without him, Marx would not have been able to write. He would have starved and died. And to be a Jew and poor is a very difficult situation. I know it because I was born in a Jaina family. Jainas are the Jews of India. You will not find a single Jaina beggar all over India. All the beggars are Hindu. Not a single Jaina beggar. I have searched all over India. I have not been able to find a single Jaina beggar. They are not poor. Everybody is comfortably rich, and most of them are the richest people in the country. Now, to be a Jew and poor, when all other Jews are rich, naturally creates jealousy. It is not compassion for the poor. Nowhere in Das Kapital, Communist Manifesto, and other books of Marx, you can find a single statement which shows compassion for the poor. No, not at all. It is jealousy for the rich. So if I have to define it exactly, the definition will be Marx communism means destroy the rich. Divide the riches equally. That's what they have done in Russia, in China. The poor are still poor, but in a way satisfied because the riches have been distributed. The rich people have been destroyed. The comparison has disappeared. Now there is nobody rich to make you feel poor. You are still poor. The poverty, of course, is equally distributed. Everybody is equally poor. So nobody can compare, nobody can feel jealous. Nobody can think that things can be better than they are. I am not in favor of distributing poverty, in destroying the rich. So I say no to the communism that exists today, the Marxian communism. But I say yes to a totally different concept of communism. To me, communism is the last and the highest stage of capitalism. It is not against capitalism that communism can succeed. It is the fulfillment of capitalism. That communism happens. Capitalism is the first system in the world which creates capital, wealth. Before, there was feudalism. They never created wealth. They exploited people. They robbed people. The wealth that the kings had in the past was a crime. It was exploited, forcibly taken from the people, from the poor. It was not their creation. Capitalism is the first system which creates wealth. It needs intelligence to create wealth. And unless we create so much wealth, that wealth loses all meaning. Unless we create the standard of wealth so high that the poor automatically starts becoming richer. Nobody can eat wealth. What you are going to do with it? There comes a point of saturation. And when capitalism comes to the point of saturation, then only the flowering of communism. Hence, I call my community commune. Communism the word communism is made of commune. I believe in capitalism. Perhaps I am the only person in the whole world to say so clearly that I believe in capitalism. Because this is the first time in history of man that a system is there which creates wealth and can create so much wealth with science and scientific technology added to it that there is no need for poverty. There is no need for distributing it. It will be distributed automatically. There is no need for any dictatorship of the proletariat. Capitalism can remain perfectly in tune with democracy, with individuality, with freedom of speech. It destroys nothing. So my approach is that we have to spread the idea of creating wealth rather than distributing. What you are going to distribute if you don't have it in the first place? Even Marx had never said that communism will happen in Russia or China, because these countries were so poor that what you are going to distribute. Even Marx's idea was that communism will happen first in America. But it happened in Russia. Of course, it is something false. It is something not exactly making people happier and richer and freer, but is spoiling all that they have and giving them a false hope that soon you will all be rich. When that soon will come, 60 years have passed, more than 60, since the revolution. All the revolutionaries have died. All were hoping that it is coming. And Russia has remained poor, is still poor. Even the poorest man in America is in a better position than a well-salaried person in Russia. And what they have lost is of immense value. They have lost freedom, they have lost individuality, they have lost freedom of expression. They have lost everything. They are living in a vast concentration camp. No justice available. Nowhere to appeal. No possibility to be heard. I am against this kind of communism. This is so destructive. But I have my own idea of communism. Hence I say yes and no. no for the communism that you are aware of, and yes for the communism of which I am continuously talking to you. Create wealth, richness, and now that science and technology has given you all the means to create it, it is simply foolish to think of distribution. Forget about distribution. Create it so much that it comes to a saturation point. Then from there it starts spreading to everyone. Communism is the ultimate flowering of capitalism.
The word content and voice recording on this audio format are the copyright of Osho International Foundation. Copyright dates 1953 through 2003. All rights reserved. Reproduction in any media is prohibited.